This is tape 2 of the PDH online audio course E315, something about industrial HVAC controls. The control system for the 1993 installation was based on a mid-sized programmable logic controller. None of the special capabilities of a PLC were used in 1993. A hand-off auto, HOA, selector switch set at hand sent a signal to the PLC, or set at auto sent a different signal. The PLC sent a start command to the motor starter for the fan. The starter sent a run status command, run status signal back to the PLC. The PLC sent a run status signal to a pilot light. There's no evidence that the auto position was any different from the hand position. The only alarming was when a relay at the fan picked up a failure from a local pilot light and retransmitted it to the PLC. The PLC then retransmitted it to an alarm light on the control panel. There was no horn or any of the normal annunciation features. Now, that went by pretty fast. Maybe it would be fun to play it back again, but I'm not sure. The words might still be a little bit confusing. What's going on? If you don't have a PLC, you turn the switch and electricity goes down a wire to the motor starter and starts a fan. You turn off the switch, the electricity no longer goes down to the starter and the fan goes off. What they have done in 1993 was they put a PLC in the middle. The signal went from the switch to the PLC, then the PLC sent a new electrical signal down to the fan. Without a PLC, the motor starter would send a little electricity back to a light when the motor starter went on. In 1993, the motor starter sent electricity back to the PLC. The PLC sent electricity to the light. So the PLC was in the middle, but it wasn't really doing anything. It was just kind of there. And we'll talk a little later why it seemed like a good idea to put it there. There was a big HVAC control panel. It had lots of switches and lights, by which I mean, you know, in the 20s on selector switches, each hand-off auto, each of them having a light saying that the fan was on. There was a big pump room control panel. We will look at it just a little, not study the controls. The pump room control panel included the cooling tower, tower pumps, and air compressor. It also included some other process pumps. But again, it's the same idea. The switch told the PLC, the PLC told the motor starter. Then the motor starter said, yeah, I'm trying, send it back to the PLC, send it back to operate a light. Then there was a third indicator panel, and yeah, I'm thinking, the PLC wasn't used for that. The wire that went to the light on the control panel had the same screw, had two wires under it, and one went to the indicator panel. The fact that a PLC can duplicate signals, it didn't do anything like that. There was a light wire, and the light wire branched in two directions for two different lights. The indicator panel was located outside the control room. Now remember, the HVAC is in the HVAC room next to the HVAC motor control center. The pump room control panel is in the pump room next to the pump room motor control center. But the indicator panel was out on the plant floor next to the control room. The very big pump and HVAC indicator contained four Z-fold strip charts. Now again, I don't know if you're familiar with these, and we don't have, yeah, we do have a picture in the written version of this. It's a DIN cutout. I'm saying a lot of things that don't mean anything to other people. Back in the old days, controls were big things, and they had a big cutout in a control panel. And we got to the place we were buying these things from Germany. DIN is the German standards organization, and a big cutout was a DIN cutout. Well, then they started making smaller controllers, and they were in quarter DIN cutouts. Quarter DIN cutout looks like it's about 6 inches by 6 inches. Now, a lot of these controllers were deep. They were like 20 or 24 inches deep. I mean, they were big things. They had a small faceplate, but a big tray that it went back in where it plugged into things. Well, using one of these spaces, they have a strip chart recorder, which has a window on the front where you can see the paper that's pulled off the Z fold, kind of like paper towels in a dispenser. And then it's run under the little roller and the little pins, and then it's connected in a pile of Z fold on the other end. Each of these strip charts had three pins in it. Now, once again, if you're not familiar with strip charts are really super fine instruments. They have fine electronics in them. They have fine electromechanicals that drive the pen. They have a just beautiful technology that gets the ink from the ink reservoir through the pen and on the paper. Now, if you can visualize this, you can see there's an awful lot of things to go wrong, and that's how strip charts are. The only time you see a strip chart working is when somebody wants it to work and keeps doing maintenance on it. The first thing that happens is they handle paper, and there's all this little dust. If you take paper out of a box, you get dust, and you do it for 3 years in a row, you get a lot of dust. So strip charts that aren't being taken care of, the window is covered with this dust from the paper. Just folding the paper releases the dust that covers the window. Somebody has to wipe the window. And of course, somebody has to replace the paper every 24 hours, depending on what the speed you set the paper feed for. So let's go back to indicator panel with four Z fold strip charts. That's four charts, three pins each. There are 12 signals that are being recorded in real time and stored for historic study. Each strip chart had three channels and alarm relays for each input. That is, at an adjustable point, maybe 3/4 of the way up the scale, it closed the switch contact. Now, what did the switch contact do? Went to the light panel, went to the PLC, then went to the light panel. The alarm relays were sent to the PLC for relay to indicator lights. What distinguishes the first 1993 controls design from what we will call the 1994 design is the use of hand-off auto selector switches. Watch this line on the summary closely. Now we get a sidebar. What would a controls designer do differently? Well, first we must readjust our minds to the 1990 decade. 1980 standard was to buy motor starters with handoff auto selector and a run status light on the door of the starter. The starters were grouped in a motor control center. That's a wall of a room and three or four rows of motor control centers down the middle. What are motor control centers? Well, a motor starter takes a certain amount of space. The ones we use today are about 12 inches high, maybe 20 inches wide. That's a motor starter. Motor control center has six of these stacked vertically. Now, there are different forms, and there are ways to change this around, but the basic standard version is six high buckets containing motor starters. If you got more than six, you have two columns. That's 12, 18, 24, 30, 36. And you see, when we got 27, we've got a lot of stacks of these. Plus, we've got the pumps we were talking about. So there are a lot of motor starters involved here, a lot of motor control centers. Remote automatic start, stop, and duplicate control station were handled by large bundles of wires to the remote control panel. Okay, now what are we saying there? We're saying the primary control was the switch on the front of the motor starter. You put it in hand, the fan runs. You put it in off, the fan's off. That always works. Now, the reason I'm interested in that, I've spent time in maintenance, that's how you test it. If it runs when it's in hand and it doesn't run when it's in off, then there's a problem in the auto position. And I don't do auto position. Somebody else does that. He's got to fix it. Okay, what happens in the auto position? Well, the wire that starts the starter goes someplace else. And it may go to a different control panel, or it may go to some kind of automatic machine or some kind of control operation. Now, what are we learning from this? In 1980, we're talking about, you had handoff auto at the starter and a remote start stop. Each motor starter had to have wires coming off of it for the start stop and the run light. How is that different from 1993? Well, in 1993, it was exactly the same, but the latest available technology and the opportunity to upgrade complex control logic was inside the PLC, and other PLC functions were being talked about but not being implemented at this time. And again, 1980, motor starter, wire. 1993, motor control center, PLC, buttons and lights. Now, what are they talking about, these features that we didn't install? These features we are talking about are digital communication with the PLC, so you can tell it what to do without one wire for each button. Remember, 27 fans requires 27 selector switch. 27 fans requires 27 lights. If you can run one wire and handle all that communication in a digital form, it's sure easier to run the wire. And there may be advantages in terms of wiring up 27 locations on the PLC, 27 locations on the lights and switches. If you just plug, you know, the digital communication cable in, it's on the screen and has all the same functions. What we are saying is that the 1993 was a good design at its time and a bit innovative. They had incorporated the PLC with the intention of using it for digital communication at a later date. Except, there was no packaged enunciator or enunciator function used within the PLC. A controls engineer is supposed to be a member of the Instrument Society of America, ISA. And I think they changed their name, Instrument Society of North America, International Instrument Society, something like that. But they're ISA, and everybody knows who ISA. This control engineer is supposed to be a member or read magazines on controls. A big advertiser at that time was Panalarm, maker of packaged enunciators. Enunciator does not report run status, only trouble. In the simplest form, it is a row of lights and associated warning tags. When a light goes on, the operator reads the tag next to that light to see what the problem is. An enunciator always has a horn and a flashing light. An enunciator has several other significant features, including lamp test, so that you can be certain if the lamp's out, it's not because the lamp's burned out, it's because there's no alarm at that point. And, I mean, that sounds silly, perhaps, in 2010 when we have LEDs that last forever. But remember back in 1980 and 1990, we were using incandescent lamps, and they had things like 400-hour life. And a 1,000-hour life on a premium bulb, not this 10-year life on LEDs, and I think that may be conservative also. So the enunciator had significant features, including lamp test, latch on first out. What does that mean? Well, typically when something goes bad, a lot of things go bad. It's very valuable to know which set off the string of problems. And an enunciator does that. It captures the first one as well as the subsequent ones, but it lets you know which one was first. Silence and reset buttons. A thing comes on and it's blurring at you and a flashing light. They always have a silence button. The silence button turns off the horn but leaves the light on. Why is that? Well, that's the proper way to communicate. There's a reset button that turns off the lights. Now, the reset button only works if the alarm has gone away. I mean, if something bad has happened and the enunciator says something bad has happened, you push reset, it doesn't reset if it's still bad. The continuing light until the problem is corrected. It's a feature of an enunciator. It latches when it comes in, and it resets when you push the button. It also reflashes if the alarm comes in a second time. Now, that's a little bit of a complicated idea, but it's a very, very powerful idea. So if you haven't run into this before, please join me as we step through it again. Alarm comes in. Thing flashes. Push the reset. If the alarm's still there, it stays on steady. And if that same alarm comes in a second time, how could it come in a second time if it's already on? That's what they do. They flash if it happens a second time. Maybe it blips, it resets in the field and then comes on again. But the reset is not permanent. The reset is temporary. When there's a new alarm, you get a new flashing. The reset doesn't hold. It's a moment. You have to push it to quiet them. And more that happens, you have to push it again every time alarms come in. Now, that's an annunciator. And what we're saying, there's no annunciator in 1993. It's called an annunciator panel. But it doesn't do enunciation. All it does is status. Status is run stop. Actually, it did do some trouble. So when there were trouble alarms, it would give you the status of the alarm, but it didn't do the latching function. These advanced features are near universal, the advanced features meaning annunciator features, and are defined by ISA sequences. There are different ways to do it. I've explained to you what I think is the most common. And again, you can go to ISA or you can go to Panalarm or other annunciator manufacturers to see what the different sequences are that are available. Notice this detail, because one of the differences between Design 1 and Design 2 in 1993 and 1994 and the photographs. And this is where the mystery deepens. 1993 was a design. It was sent out to the field. 1994 was a revision. And it was sent to the field. 1994 was left in the files, and everybody thought it was built like 1994. Actually, the drawing said as built with a date in 1995. Except they were different from the photographs. Uh-oh. Now, let's talk about 1994 when we are reading these documents that were left from us from 1993 and 1994. We are writing the story in 2010. The people in 1993 and 1994 are not around anymore. All we have is the construction documents they left behind. When I got this assignment, I was given a book of drawings labeled as built. However, the control logic diagrams in the book were marked void, and there was another set of drawings in the back that were incomplete and unissued, but they replaced the controls logic. Now, what's going on here? And we'll talk about it later, what's going on here. But obviously, there was a substantial change between 1993 and 1994. And we're summarizing this with a graphic. The graphic has Design 1 that we discussed previously with 16 exhaust fans and 6 supply fans and 5 makeup air units in the cooling tower. Then we get down to the interesting stuff at the bottom. What was the difference between 1993 and 1994? In 1993, handoff auto selector switches were used with run lights. But in 1994, start, stop, push buttons and run lights were used with the addition of a nematron. Now let's say that again. Handoff auto selector switches had been changed to start, stop, push buttons, and a nematron was added. There was a warning phrase in the text above when we were talking about this, about the void sheets and the unissued sheets. Well, the set was internally consistent. The drawings on how to build the control panels showed push buttons. The logic showed push buttons. Everything said push buttons. The HOA switches were on the void sheets. So all evidence was the revision had taken place. They changed from HOA to start-stop. Sidebar, what is a nematron? The only information in the 1994 set was an 8.5x11 addendum sheet with a drawing below. Okay, we got a drawing. What are we going to do on this tape with a drawing? Well, we're going to do the words of the drawing. A nematron is an operator interface terminal. That's the generic name for a nematron. Nematron is a brand. It's in a box. It's not usable by itself, but it's very usable in an industrial environment if you put it in a heavy steel box. What is this thing we're putting in a box? Well, it has a number of distinguishing characteristics. First, it has a little tiny window. Do you look in and see the resistors and capacitors? No. It's a little tiny, it can be a text window or a graphics window. In 1994, it was a text window. It would say things, and then there were buttons. And it would say, if you like this, say yes. If you don't like this, say no. And yes and no were buttons below. But it was a lot more complicated than that. There were functions 1 through 4, and maybe function 1 was raise, function 2 was lower, function 3 was previous, function 4 was next. You've seen these on internet, navigation panels. Well, that's kind of what a Nemotron was. It was an insight into the PLC where it had a little window to tell you things and some little buttons where you could tell the PLC things. On this 8.5x11 addendum is a Nemotron Model 120. So I went to the internet, and they still have information on the Nemotron 120. So you can get the specification, what's inside the box, and all that. That's not what they want to sell you. And I don't know that they even would, but it's on the website, which is keen, so I could find out what a Nemotron 120 was. And the words on the addendum, mount next to HVAC and mechanical status indicator and annunciator panel on factory floor. So it's pretty clear, in addition to status annunciation, we were going to give the guys at the control room the opportunity to modify the contents of the PLC. Whoa. What are those words? What does that mean? HOA works, and it's very fixed. If it's hand, it's hand. If it's off, it's off. If it's auto, it's whatever the auto guy decides. But hand is very fixed. It runs. Off is very fixed. It doesn't run. If the selector switch is in the hand position, you don't modify it. If the selector switch is in the off position, you don't modify it. If it's in the auto position, you can modify it if you got a remote push button and all that. Not so with start-stop. When you push start, you start it, and then you walk away, and somebody else can stop it, and there's no interference here. If you push stop, that stops it, but if somebody else starts it, then it runs again. Now, when would that be good? Well, that would be good if you had two control panels that were both controlling the thing. And if the guy's standing at one, he starts it from there, and if he's standing at the other, he starts it from there. There's something a little hinky going on here. But it gets worse than that when you add a Nemotron, because now you've got an electronic way to start and stop the fan also, in addition to the push buttons that start and stop the fan. Now, the light on the panel is going to report the status of the fan, and the Nemotron display, if you're on the right page, will report the status of the fan. But we've got two control points there. We've duplicated the big HVAC control panel with the little Nemotron next to the what we were calling the indicator and annunciation panel. Let's see what it says here. It says a Nemotron is a brand name of what we now call an operator interface terminal, OIT, or panel view. Panel view is an Allen Bradley brand, and it's very, very popular. Most people call them panel views because most of them are panel views. You get it from Allen Bradley to run an Allen Bradley programmable logic controller, or you get it from Allen Bradley to run somebody else's programmable logic controller. But Allen Bradley makes a very nice operator interface terminal. The early Nemotrons were text only. Very soon they became graphics, and the panel view from Allen Bradley, I won't say it's very sophisticated graphics, but it's at least medium sophisticated graphics. It reads the value from the PLC operating registers and can act as buttons or lights to the PLC. The pictures indicate that the Nemotron was never purchased or installed. Aha! Did you catch that? Those were big words, even though they were said quietly. The drawings say, we got a Nemotron. The pictures say, got no Nemotron. The pictures also say we've got no push buttons, all we've got are selector switches. So the way the job was assigned to the designer was bogus. It was assigned to him, you got it like this, just change it for the fans we've got. Well, it wasn't like that. So all the design using the push buttons was wrong and had to be replaced using selector switches. And that's what's the difference between ReLock 1 and ReLock 2. The first design was following the instructions using the issued construction documents, the as-built drawings, and then it was modified when the picture showed that they were invalid. It wasn't built like that, even though it said as-built. Okay, the story goes on to show pictures, and since we're going to have an awful hard time showing the pictures, I'm going to gloss through this, and then we'll take another break. Let's get a little out of order on the story now. When I got the assignment, I studied the as-built drawings of the original design and the current HVAC design. As I was instructed, I updated the as-built set to the current needs. I did not know about the photographs, but I found the photographs. And let's look at them. In the written version of this, I haven't downloaded this from the internet to see if they came through in color. I hope they did. Well, they're all red lights, so they're either on or off, but they're red if they're on, okay? And I'm looking at the PLC and HVAC control panel. What that means is it controls the HVAC, and if you open the door, you're going to see the PLC in there. And it's got selector switches. It has no push buttons. It has rows and rows of selector switches and lights. It's clear there are many groups made up of a selector switch and light. These are all the fans and HVAC equipment on the project. There are a few three device groups at the top. They're trouble indicating lights for a burner failure or a dirty filter. The lamp test button at the bottom is not on any of the construction documents. The only way to do this is to program the PLC to force all the indicator light outputs on at the same time. Individual push to test lights are available, but there's no such thing as a group test for 120 volts AC. It has to be done in Logic. The use of selector switches means that the Nematron could not turn off or on individual fans. A push button is momentary, and a different push button can give the PLC or starter a different command. But a selector switch is continuous and not amenable to multiple control stations. Now, in fact, they're spring return selectors like an auto ignition, but they weren't used here. They're not common. They're used as resets. It's the only place I've ever seen them, where it's a momentary function that you're doing off a selector switch. There are two more important points to get from this picture. First, that's a lot of fans. The number 27 sounds like a lot of fans, but seeing buttons for 27 fans is more impressive. Second, some of the selector switches are in the off position and the light is on. This tells us that the plant is very good at replacing indicator lamps. Bulbs do burn out and don't get replaced unless someone orders them and puts them in. This also tells us there's something hinky going on. Not just one or two, but many of the switches are in the off position and the light is on. Since the plant needs the fans to run, I suspect the lights are right, more right than the ones that say the fan is not running. I don't have an answer for this, and it's disturbing. Now, I said the plant needs the fans to run. These fans are on individual machines. If you don't have a fan, they pile up dust inside and get all clogged. I mean, you can't run the process without the fans. The fans are an essential part of the process. We're going to look at the pump room control panel, but first I'm going to take a break, and I invite you to do the same.